Welcome to another episode of Texas by Design. I'm Kevin Cron, Chief Public Market Officer with Quiddity Engineering. And it's our pleasure today to welcome Commissioner Jack Cagle, Harris County Precinct 4, to the program. Commissioner, welcome to the program.
It is a delight to be with Texas by Design and to be with great designers, builders, leaders, movers, and shakers in our community. Thank you for allowing me to be here. And Precinct 4, where I have the privilege of serving, both the old Precinct 4 and the new Precinct 4 are places to where we move and innovate, live and breathe. And so Texas by Design, we're here.
That's fantastic, Commissioner. That's fantastic. First off, I'd like to just thank you for your leadership at Harris County for over the last two decades. You've spent a lot of time really focusing on making the community a better place. I'd like to talk a little bit about that. When I think about leadership and where that comes from, certainly you had some big influences early on in your career.
My grandfather, who was the individual that gave me the name Cactus Jack, he started working for Humble Oil, which we now know as Exxon, during the Depression. And although he was trained as a machine mechanic from Burroughs, which we now know as IABM, he was given the job of replacing typewriters for Humble Oil typewriter ribbons. That would be the same as giving someone with a degree in computer science the job of replacing batteries on calculators.
Right.
Because in the old days, they actually had mechanical computers, and he was the mechanic that would fix those. Came in during the Depression at the low end of the low end on a six-month probation and ended up being a division head.
Okay.
And under his division, he had the legal department. He had all kinds of other departments, real estate, underneath him, and he didn't even have a high school diploma.
Really?
But he was a great leader, and he was the most educated individual that I ever met. He was also a professor at University of Houston, and he taught classes at South Texas College of Law without a high school diploma.
Sure.
But the leadership components that were imbued in my life came from many of the instructions and stories and tales that my grandfather gave to me on how to be successful as a leader. And in our family, every few generations, we had someone that went into public service. And so, in fact, the first person that came to America had fled religious persecution overseas, had come here, and they were a judge. And so every few generations, we had someone that went in, and my grandfather said that if I worked hard and studied hard, that it was time for us to give back to this wonderful country that we live in again, and to give back, and that it would be good for me to go and take that mantle up and do our family's service back. But he also taught me a number of things on leadership and how to be a good leader. And one of the ones that I've always held dear was his four C's.
Okay.
And the first C was courtesy, common courtesy. And then he would say, you never know when you're in the elevator and the young lady that's operating the elevator girl, is the granddaughter of the CEO of the company. To be a leader means be courteous to everyone, because you never know when they might be, the elevator girl might be the granddaughter of the CEO of the company,
right.
Or the granddaughter of the judge of judges. And he would then add a scripture verse. The Bible teaches you, you never know when you're entertaining angels unaware. Be courteous to everyone. The second C that he would talk about would be the clock.
Okay.
And this is especially important today because a lot of times folks really have no sense in our post-pandemic world of time. But he would say it's very, very important that when you are wanting to be a leader, that you also respect the clock of the company. Be one of the first persons that's there.
Yep.
Donate a little extra time into the operation of the company that you are serving in, and be one of the later ones to leave so that when, and having gone through the Depression, this was very near and dear to him, and they're having to cut staff, you're the person that gives a few extra minutes in the beginning of the day, a few extra minutes at the end of the day, working hard, so that those who you are working with are inspired to give value to the company they serve.
Yeah.
And those that are in management above you will see you are giving your best and you add more than what you're even being compensated for.
Okay.
So he said, watch the clock, but make sure that you're giving value added. The third C that he would talk about would be competence. And when he talked about competence, he would talk about it in terms of two aspects, general and specific. And he said that you just need to be, wherever you're at, you need to do the best that you can at that job.
Okay.
Grow where you're planted is what we would say these days. And so if you've been given a job of replacing the ribbons on a typewriter, all work is honorable. You might be above that by your training or your skill, but you won't get to the better job.
Yep.
Until you can prove that you are competent in what has been given to you. And if you do not prove that you are competent at what is given to you in your small world, people won't trust you to move into the bigger world. But if you demonstrate over competence, that you are the best at it, you figured out a way of saving the company money, it might be beneath you, but you have done everything you can, then they're going to go, oh, we need to take that talent and move it up the chain so that we can have that benefit elsewhere. And take classes. This is a lot of companies, they offer free education. Take advantage of it. Give the opportunities whenever you can. Can we have a volunteer? Always be the one to volunteer because you are bringing competence and skill to what you're doing. And then he said you want to have not just specific competence in the area that you have been given, but you want to have general competence. And that general competence means that you want to learn the jobs of everybody else that's around you. So I might be the world's best engineer in a particular area, and you are in business development. I might not know thing one of business development, but if I talk to you and I learn what you're doing, if you're out ill someday, then I can fill in for you so that the company operation is able to move forward. And the company will say, this employee is a team player.
Right.
And he can help in his area, but he can also help in everybody else's area. And so when there's an opportunity in the company, they love having folks that can show that they can do more than just, you know,
sure,
mine and no more. And so, and that fits very, very well when you go into general competence into the fourth C, which is he called the company attitude. As a leader, he said it was very common for him to see some folks that would get to be up in the middle management or higher management, and they become important. And there'd be an important meeting coming on, and the secretary would be working on getting a letter out. And that letter getting out was the most important thing for the company at the moment. But the hotshot young leader would have the secretary stop typing the letter to go make coffee for the meeting that's about to begin. He said, that person failed as a leader. The bathroom might need to be cleaned. The toilet paper may need to be changed in the bathroom. And that young hotshot leader would pull the secretary trying to get the deadline met on the important letter for the company off of that task to go fix the bathroom.
Right.
Leadership failed. My grandfather said that when you have the company attitude, you need to have the attitude of what is the most important thing for this company to succeed right now. And that letter is it. And if you are the leader, you're cleaning the toilet and you're fixing the coffee for the meeting that's coming up so that the letter can get out, because that is the most important thing at the moment.
Right, right.
So you take the company attitude. What is going to benefit this company the most?
That's a great story, Commissioner. It sounds like you're describing that servant leadership that you just carry really across everything that you do. You know, Harris County has obviously seen a lot of growth, seen a lot of success, seen a lot of challenges over your time there at Harris County. Talk to us a little bit about the leadership that you've really been able to show and what you try to do on a day-to-day basis really to carry that forward throughout everything you do.
One of the things that we do in Precinct 4 is that I try to imbue in our team a few little language changes.
Okay.
When I first came in, a lot of the staff wanted to call me boss. Hey, boss. And they meant it in a kind way. But you know, a boss is someone who tells you what to do. And I began to insist that they call me their leader. Because a leader is someone that leads the team, but he leads a team of folks who are each empowered to make their own decisions for the benefit of the precinct. And I like to call your precinct for employees instead of this particular employee, of which, you know, they've got a boss, but I like to call them ambassadors as opposed to messengers. A boss will have messengers that will tell people what it is that the boss decided. A leader will have ambassadors that will go out there, and they have the power to make decisions. And a lot of times they don't make the same decision that I would make. Sometimes they would choose to go left where I would choose to go right. But we know this from military history, the worst thing that could happen to an army is to be still and indecisive. And I would rather our team get out there in the field and make a decision based upon their best skills and efforts, even if I might have made a different choice had I been in their shoes, instead of them stopping and waiting to get instructions from the boss.
Sure.
They are my ambassador, and I'm going to back them on the decision. And then afterwards, I may sit back there and say, okay, now, if you find yourself in this situation again, let me instruct you on a few more bits of information that may help you as you grow.
Sure.
Reward them for having the initiative, and then encourage them and instruct them so that they could do even better next time.
Right.
Ambassadors instead of messengers, a leader instead of a boss, and to empower those. And in an illustration, this comes also from my grandfather that he one time gave. If you're about to go into battle, which would you rather have? 5 knights riding together into battle with a leader, or would you rather have a knight with 4 squires carrying his spears?
I'll take the collective team every time.
So empower. Empower your employees, empower your team with both your language and with what you do.
I think that's so important. And, you know, we see it across industry. You know, the problems really that we're facing day in, day out are so challenging, and they're so much more diverse today than what they were in the past. You got to have that collective team. So empowering your team really across your entire precinct to go out and really serve the needs of the community, I think is so powerful.
We're trying to serve 1.2 million people in Precinct 4. And we've recently had a very drastic redistricting. Traditionally, redistricting occurs on the margins, and it's a good thing. That's so that one person could have one vote. And I don't want to go down the route of all the political causes and implications, but Commissioner Tom Ramsey and I went to a commissioner's court meeting on a Thursday. There was a map that was proposed that ended up being adopted that afternoon, and the following Friday, we were in each other's precinct. It was like that movie, Freaky Friday, where the mother and the daughter went to bed on a Thursday night, and Friday they woke up and they were in each other's body. We experienced that. And so we had to deal with how do you begin to serve 1.2 million people that is a completely different 1.2 million people than you had been serving for the last 10 years. It's quite an experience. But I had an awesome team who was empowered to get out there.
That's great.
And we were able to move in. We were able to find out what the needs of the new constituents are, find out, you know, what partnerships that we need to make to build upon the great work that Commissioner Ramsey and Raddick before them had done. And in fact, Ramsey and I were engaged in our own form of a partnership. Ramsey can add. So we took Precinct 3 and 4, put them together, and we called it Precinct 7. And so if there is a constituent that needed something, we didn't get too caught up on which precinct was it in. We just
wanted
to make
sure
that the need was tagged.
Absolutely.
Taken care of.
That's fantastic.
What about a concept? Government working together to help people.
There you go. That's what it's all about. There's no doubt about it. Well, Commissioner, I'd like to talk a little bit about, and we've talked about this in the past, you know, green infrastructure, sustainable design, the natural world are important to you. So is fiscal responsibility. These two things can have very different perspectives as you look at them in the world. In Harris County, how do these two things converge within your precinct?
Well, we have found that more often than not, that green is green. In other words, many of the green technologies, when looked at and dealt with appropriately, are fiscally profitable.
Okay.
For example, We always analyze our roadways for green infrastructure capacity. And we do an economic analysis that goes along with it. Many times with your bioswales and some of your other green infrastructure, you're actually able to have long-term cost savings and maintenance and in the way of doing a project so that you can end up saving the taxpayer dollars when you apply some of these green infrastructures, which is working with nature as opposed to fighting nature. My favorite example is actually our service center. Okay. 10 years ago when we had redistricting, there was some litigation that was involved in that. All five members of Commissioner's Court were in agreement, which was the usual until recently. But the judge at that time had made a comment that we needed to make sure that our main service center was located more in the center of where we were serving. And so we began the process of building a new service center out of which we can have our trucks and our office space and those things to where we can serve the public from. And John Blunt had come to me and said, I'd like for you to try to look at a net zero approach so that we work with nature as opposed to fighting nature. And there are a number of benefits to it, one of which is that it would be sustainable. So if the electrical grid went down, we could stay in operation because we weren't dependent upon the grid for that. And two, based upon the cost of electricity at the time, John had said that we could, in a period of 10 years, because the cost is higher on the front end,
right.
It's a bigger capital investment on the front end, but if we made that bigger capital investment to do the geothermal underneath and to do the solar panels on the top and the taller ceilings so that you can, like they used to do in the old days,
right,
where before they had electricity, they worked with nature as opposed to fighting against it, that if we did these investments in the front end, that in a period of 10 years, the cost savings on electrical bills alone would pay for themselves, assuming that electricity stayed the same and there is no cost of living increase. And then in a period of 20 years, assuming a marginal cost of living increase and a marginal increase in the price of electricity, the facility would be free to the public. Now, being a fiscal conservative, free to the public sounds pretty good.
Sounds pretty good.
But to get free to the public in a period of 20 years on a building that should last 50 years meant that you had to pay 40% more on the front end. Okay, you know, that's the rough spot. How do you justify to the public, okay, we're going to pay more on the front end of this building, but this is going to be free to you in 20 years. And the added cost could be paid for. Now, since then, with the price of electricity going the way it is, we have come to realize that that original 20-year time span has probably been reduced down to 12.
Wow.
To where this facility that is resilient has the capacity of being, it's on the high ground, it's not going to flood, it's got the AC, it's got the heating. If the grid goes down, you will be served and your facility will be there to serve you. It is resilient, it's built strong like a bull, and in 12 years, due to the cost savings, would be free to the public. During the winter times, we get checks in. During the summer times, we pay like $1,500 for a full facility.
That's amazing.
And the normal way that you do things in government is you build the cheapest building you can, and then you pay exorbitant prices for electricity to overpower the cheapness of the
right.
construction and how you did it. And we just went the other way. And so that is green infrastructure to where we worked with nature as opposed to finding it. And then after our design, which actually even has some curvature in it with a shape to catch the wind so it cools on the inside, the ambient lighting, and it's got a sort of a horseshoe shape in a certain direction to deal with the lighting and everything, which is all this modern technology that we have. It's built on the old Humble Oil Camp. And someone found in a museum the original Humble Oil Camp, which was in the early 1900s, pre-electricity.
Sure, sure.
And the facility was a series of buildings. Ours is one unified building, but a series of buildings that had the same shape.
Wow.
On the same location, with the apertures open to catch the same wind patterns, which was the technology of their day
wow.
to keep their buildings cool. And so,
very cool.
History repeats itself. We're using the old technologies prior to electricity to help make our modern days to where we are over dependent on electricity sometimes work out.
That's fantastic. That's
so
a
green
fantastic story.
Is green.
Green is green.
By going the green route, we're going to have free facility 12 years from its construction.
That's great.
To the public.
That is fantastic. That's a fantastic story. And then even think about, you know, with the cost of electricity now, it's only accelerating. So that's fantastic. But we look forward to having you back on Texas by Design in the near future and continuing the conversation.
So we get to come back and talk about Texas by Design, episode 2 of The Beauties of Precinct 4?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look forward to it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us today on Texas by Design. If you enjoyed our program, we encourage you to give us a 5-star rating. We also encourage you to look for future programs wherever you get your podcasts.
Texas by Design.